Hey, before we start this episode, just want to remind you that the Fearless Woman's Guide to Starting a Business is available everywhere that you like to buy books, and you can get it in paperback, Kindle, and even as an audiobook. I'll have links on where you can purchase in the podcast notes. Okay, back onto the show.
You are listening to One Broken Mom, a podcast dedicated to raising awareness about mental health, parenting, and self-improvement. I'm the host, Ami Quirconi. One Broken Mom is not a family show. It is intended for adults only and may contain adult language. Sometimes the topics are serious, but you can count on the episodes to be entertaining. Also, One Broken Mom is not offering any psychiatric or medical diagnosis. We're just here giving away useful and important information. So, if you're ready to hear real talk by real people so that we can all get better together, then you're in the right place. And welcome.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to One Broken Mom. I have with me, again, one of my favorite guests, Jax Anderson. She's a therapist who specializes in working with families and teenagers out of the Wisconsin area. And she's always great to have back on because we have really clear, candid conversations. And so I have my explicit warning on all my podcast episodes because sometimes adult words are just really important to share. And and if there's an episode where that comes in, it's always more so with Jax and myself. And I also think that Jax is probably the only other guest I've had on the show that has as many tattoos as I do. So yes. We get to flex our ink on the show. On the podcast, you like have no idea what we're talking about. But now that you're watching One Broken Mom on video on YouTube, you can actually see what I'm talking about. So cool. Welcome back, Jax.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's nice to be back.
Cool. Now, today's episode is going to have some colorful language in it because it's a very emotional topic. And as parents with teenagers, we all know they are not always pleasant. And we had covered in another episode why that can be, that there's a lot of emotional elements that are going on during a teenager in that very critical, very real adolescent brain development stage. Mm-hmm. And one of those things is that their emotions can kind of make them assholes. And it's really challenging as a parent when your kid is being a jerk, and you want to let them know that one, they've hurt your feelings and you don't want your child to grow up to be an asshole. And so how do you handle that at the same time of like all the stuff that we talked about, which is being respectful of their emotions and wanting to help them through emotional regulation and stuff. And I admit that, as everybody does, if any adult comes up to you and treats you like a jerk or says something really shitty to you or does something, you just want to tell them to fuck off. Right. But it's not a good idea with your child when you're trying to be a good parent. So Jax is here to help us talk about what do we do in this situation? So first of all, why might our kid be acting like an asshole? Why might they choose to be more aggressive, let's say, with their behavior and reactions in life we need to kind of understand right out of the get-go?
Yeah, well, they're usually an asshole to the people that they trust the most. So those people that they feel and trust can take it and who aren't going to leave them, who aren't going to love them, who they know will always give them another chance. Those are the people that they're the biggest asshole to. And typically it's because they're just tired. There's a lot of shit going on in their brain. Their brain is sucking up a lot of energy doing its development. Their body is sucking up a lot of energy doing its hormonal development. And we're asking teens to get up early in the morning, go to school, and keep their shit together all day long, and then come home and do homework or go to a job and be polite and lovely and nice to us. They're fucking tired. So sometimes when a person is tired, they're an asshole, and they're usually an asshole to those particular people.
Well, that's curious here. I don't mean to sound, snarky about this, but it sounds an awful lot why an adult will be an asshole to one another. Weird.
I know.
Right? And it sounds like then if I'm also tired from having gotten up early in the morning, gone to work all day, tried to keep my shit together with a lot of people, that I come home and when someone's trying to blow off their steam at me, it pisses me off. Does that sound about right?
Yeah. And the cycle continues.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Now, like I said, I get that we as adults, and we've talked about this, like we as adults, we have a more functioning brain, some of us more so than others, and it can and know how to like maybe restrain ourselves because we've learned that being an asshole to everybody is not a good idea for one, what, you know, one reason or another. And we've been able to regulate, modulate our, you know, our behaviors somewhat. But how do we start training teenagers that we already know, we've discussed this, they're already at a deficit in terms of this regulation and modulation and stuff. And right. So, you know, how do we start doing this with them to understand that there is a consequence to it and not have the consequence be what we probably got from our parents, which was shut up and stop being an asshole, right?
Yeah. Or smacked across the face.
Or smacked across the face. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, how do we start this? Right. Hey, be a little nicer, you know, process right. with them.
Right. I think the first thing to remember is that this isn't something that we can necessarily train into a teenager. It's not like a course they can take on how to be nicer or how not to be an asshole. This is where modeling really comes into play big time here. So how you respond to your teenager that's an asshole to you, or how they see you respond to other people that are assholes to you, how you talk about it, how you, you know, what, when you're at home, how you talk about the situation, how they see you deal with it is going to teach them and help them a lot more than what you say to them about how to deal with it.
Interesting. So I'm sitting, and we've talked about, you know, the fact that kids are learning even when we're not talking to them, that they're taking in everything, especially at this age there. So that brings up a really great point, because I think that if I were having a situation at work during the day and I'm upset with somebody that's pissed me off, and that doesn't happen very often. So anybody that works that I work with, just, but in general, I have worked with people that have pissed me off, you know, during the day, and coming home and only venting about that or showing complete rage and discharging that into the household, and having that be the only thing that the kids see me doing probably would give them the wrong message about how to actually process that. So what should I do if I'm coming home and I'm particularly pissed, and how can I model, you know, because I don't want to shut them off to the fact that it's okay to be upset with people, you know, being mad at somebody's fine. But I mean, help me understand like what I could do differently.
If there's anything that you can do on your way home to get some of the initial like angst and aggression and irritation out, so it's not so aggressive of a vent, then that will be helpful, because I don't want to take that away from people. Like, I know for me, like sometimes I'm just so emotional and it's just so pent up and I get overstimulated that, you know, I sometimes I just need that blast, and I don't really want my daughter to see that. Sometimes she does. But it's something that if you can get it out some way, somehow before getting home, that'd be great. If you can't, do your best. But I think it's important to remember that, you know, communication, like, you know, I know therapists like are always talking about communication, but because it's a thing, like if you come home and you say to your teenager, like, listen, I had a really bad day and I'm in a really bad mood. It's not your fault. Somebody at work upset me and I just couldn't let it roll off my back today. For some reason, I've just got myself worked up. So I might be short with you tonight. I might be short in general, or I need to vent. So I'm going to go in my room. I'm going to call my friend and I'm going to be gone for 45 minutes. You might hear some swearing, but I just need to get this shit out so I can get my shit together and we can have a good night, you know? So it's okay to do that, because then what your teenager learns is, whoa, okay, mom's human, dad's human. And like, that's a really good way of taking care of it. So then when your teenager comes to you and says, hey, I had a really bad day. I want to go, before I do my homework tonight, I want to go get on my phone with my friend and vent about it. You damn well better say, okay, that's okay, honey. You know, don't take that away from them because you just modeled that for them. Mm-hmm. But again, communication is key. And then even if you don't have the energy to communicate to them beforehand, if you come home and you're venting and you're all over the place, when you finally get your shit together, just say to them, like, I'm really sorry that that happened. And I'm really sorry I didn't have a chance to warn you. I had a really bad day. And I couldn't get my crap together. I'm sorry that I brought it home. I apologize. Do you need to talk about it? You know, and just offer them the opportunity. Again, that's modeling for them.
Yeah. Yeah. What pops into my head, and this happens all the time on conversations, is just like something jumps in there. And, you know, one of the things that kids are apt to do in that situation, you know, when you're coming home and you've got stress, especially in our household where it's, you know, just me and my two kids, so it's single mom. So we're all like our tight little band of bandits here, is there anything they can do for me? And I know as a parent, I'm just like, I don't want when I come home like that for them to think that they owe me anything, right? Like, it's just like, you don't have to walk on eggshells around me. You don't have to do anything for me. I don't need you to pick up slack because I'm dealing with my emotional baggage here. And, and even if they offer that, I'm conscious of letting them know that this is me processing this. It doesn't need, 'cause to me, my concern always is that sending that unconscious signal of that, you, child, have to put everything on hold for you, whatever it is you're feeling, because my emotions are taking precedence right now because I'm mom in here.
Yeah.
And so that to me also feels like that could be, kind of a slippery slope for parents that are used to,
right,
you know, saying, hey, we all have to, you know, not worry about ourselves because crisis mode just walked in the door and we all need to, you know, focus in on that. So,
well, yeah, that gives the impression that your teen is somehow responsible for your moods and that they can control it.
Oh, that's a good point.
And
yes.
They can't, as best they might try at times. They can't control your moods. So if you come home ranting and raging and your teenager says, you know, hey, is there anything I can do for you? And you say, you know what? Unfortunately, there's nothing you can do to help my mood. And it's not your fault, my mood. I can't get my crap together. But you know what? A glass of water would be really, really nice right now. Thank you for asking if you have time to do that. You know, that's okay. Because then, you know, you're also putting them in the role of being like, I get to do something for my parent. And it might not be like where they're able to control your mood, but they're able to nurture you. They're having empathy for you. So that's helping your teenager, you know, develop those empathy skills. They're putting themselves in your shoes and, wow, is there something I can do for you? You want to reward them checking in and being empathetic, but at the same time, making sure that they understand there's nothing they can do to help you with your mood, but I'm thirsty.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Now, so we go back to the, I've come home, I'm in a bad mood.
Yeah.
That happens. And that can also trigger, you know, the kids to be anxious and whatever. So now our kid has walked in the door and we haven't modeled really well for them.
Sure.
So they're, or they just don't care. So they're throwing stuff around.
Right.
You know, that's one of the things I see both of my kids do is, tossing furniture. I'm not saying they come in and trash the house, but I mean, I know for me that my way of discharging, you know, extreme emotion and anger was I didn't throw things, but I did punch things. I fully admit it. I've said that before. Mm-hmm. And so I see both of them when they get into that mode of like, they feel like they have to just, physically like push out this strong energy. And that's unsettling to see. Like, I want to go in and I want to stop that. And also I get angry because I might get a hole in the wall that I'm going to have to pay the damage deposit on. Right. And so then I'm pissed about that piece of it and stuff. And I feel like I'm confused. I get into a frozen state because this is like unfamiliar territory for me as mom should I scold them for damaging the room? I mean, or do I let it go? And how do I, is there a balance between the two of those extreme feelings of like, I mean, so in that situation, if you've got a kid who's really expressive in that way, how do I, what should I do first? And then what should I do after that?
Right. I think if you know, you're going to know if you have a kid that's expressive in that way. And so if there are some safety ways that you can set up, like ways to be aggressive in that manner, but safe, like, you know, punching a pillow or having like a heavy bag hanging up and like it's their rage room. And so they go to like that area and that's where they can get that explosiveness out. And then when that's out, then they can come back and, you know, have the conversation or do the rest of the venting, whatever it needs to be. But, you know, you want to communicate that, you know, violence towards other people or towards property is never okay when we're angry, when we're rageful like that, because there are consequences for that. You get arrested for that. Mm-hmm. So I think having a safe place to be able to do that, if that's what they need for now, that's okay. Like punching a heavy bag or punching a pillow or throwing ice cubes on cement outside, those are okay, angsty ways to like work it out. But I think definitely if your teenager comes home and they don't do those things and they go right for the wall and they punch a hole in it, I definitely think for sure there needs to be a consequence to that, but not in that moment. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe in that moment you could say, you know what, hey, you know, Susie, it's, I understand that you're upset. I can see that you're upset, but it's not okay to punch the walls. What can I do to help you? You know, I want you to express this. It's okay, but what can we do to help you not damage things? You know, and I know sometimes that's difficult in the moment, and it's not going to miraculously change just like that the first time you do it. It's going to take repetition, but staying calm and responding instead of reacting to what they're doing will help.
Yeah, yeah. And so I guess the question too then is, you know, maybe confirmation for you is not all teenagers are going to feel expressive, but I, you know, I'm conscious of this. I've said this before, you know, people that are regulars of One Broken Mom will know that I have rheumatoid arthritis, and a lot of that feels like it came from holding back a lot of anger and not being able to physically let it out because there were consequences to that anger. Right. And by my biological wiring, I'm fight, you know, I'm not flight. I don't run from danger. I step into danger. And so when I can't fight or I can't let out that powerful pulse and impulse to do something and lock it in, it feels really terrible to me. And so I see that I've got two kids that their discharge is outward as well. And I don't want that to be held back in, but I, you know, like I said, I don't know what to do differently with that. I know I had an episode with my son just recently where he wasn't mad. He just had a bunch of feelings kind of stirring up in his head. And, and he's like, I just was having a bad day, but I could hear him in the bedroom. And I did go sit in and I'm like, oh, okay. It's not cool to take your game chair. And like, you know, he didn't do it really hard, but I could hear it fall over. Like he'd gone and kicked it. Sure. Right. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, I sat down, I get that feeling of just wanting to punch something and stuff. I go, you know, do you want to like pound on your pillows a little bit or whatever? No, I don't need to, or, you know, whatever. And so I, you know, I do get that. Like, I feel like I want to be able to let them do that. So I like the idea of setting up. I used to have a heavy bag. I can't hit a heavy bag anymore, but doing something in the space. So I guess you're giving me permission to say like, it is okay to have like a rage space for some kids. Not every kid needs it, but even adults.
Not every kid needs it.
I could totally still punch it too.
I could too.
Yeah. So when we see our kids acting violently, I think that there's one of two thoughts. One is our kid has a serious emotional issue happening. And are you telling me that's just not really it could be the case, but it generally isn't the case?
What's that?
A strong emotional reaction.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, a strong emotional reaction, I think, in anybody is, there's a reason for that. And, you know, they need some understanding. Maybe they would like to connect with somebody. Maybe they're not getting something that they need. But they're having the emotional reaction because that's coming first for a teenager. And, you know, it's usually because they need something, like a baby that cries when they're hungry. Like, well, geez, all you had to do was ask for a bottle. Well, you don't have to cry. You know, like it's instinct. It comes first. The parts of their brain that they need working to ask for a bottle, that's not working. So for teenagers, it's kind of the same thing.
So, on one of the episodes that you and I've also touched on and talked about, and actually I've heard this from yourself and from other people as well, but it is when our kids are upset with us and we're talking about teenagers and we're talking about them being really jerks about it, we actually have to learn as parents to shift away from what the behavior and the action is and try to get to understanding the emotion that's behind that. Yeah. How does a parent make that shift? Because it's really hard to not be focused on what they're doing right now in that moment and, right. and try to dig in a little bit behind what may be motivating right. them. Because I know as an adult, sometimes what we're pissed about is not really what we're pissed about, right? I mean, we're exactly. we're guilty of doing that ourselves. Exactly. But it's hard to put yourself in a third person and, you know, mm-hmm. observe it. So what's a good way of taking, of working with a kid who's feeling really kind of like, and again, we're talking about the assholes. It's, mm-hmm. I think it's easy for us to identify with our kid when they have, when they're showing depression or sadness.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. but when they're being, you know, jerks with us, it's hard to not feel like you've been confronted and you're in a fight. So how do we shift gears?
Yeah, I think it's also important to realize that depression and sadness, anxiety can manifest as anger often in teenagers. So I think the biggest thing to help parents understand this is to think about when you're in a relationship, and you have an argument with your partner, or your partner does something that pisses you off, and your first reaction is to let them know that it pissed you off, right? So if, and you're like, hey, like, you might not be violent, you might not be being an asshole, but hey, this really upset me. Like, I feel like you really disrespected me here. Like, what's up? And your partner comes at you with defensiveness and explanation and rationalizing things, what happens to you? You get more pissed, right? Like, I just want to be heard. So I think that, you know, if parents could just remember that with their teenager. Now, yes, they're being an asshole. There's no reason they should be calling names, would be screaming at you, like through a megaphone at, you know, whatever they're doing, throwing stuff around. But if we meet that with scolding, lecturing, don't do that, you can't do that, I feel disrespected, making it about you, they're only going to get worse. And then you just find yourself in a loop, and each of you is just reinforcing the other's behavior over and over and over again, and you're not going to get anywhere. And what's usually ends up happening is both parties walk away pissed off, and teenagers grounded for 2 years. So, you know, like,
yeah, phone's gone,
nothing really gets resolved.
Yeah.
Yeah. Phones, cars gone, everything, you know, whatever. So I think the biggest thing for parents to understand is that those situations can largely be prevented with a little empathy, listening, and validation. Now, it's okay for a parent to say, you know what? I realize that you're upset. It would be really nice if you could stop swearing or stop calling me names, stop throwing things around. It would make it a lot easier for me to be here to hear what you have to say, because something's bugging you. And if you want to talk about it right now, we can, you know, but to respond in a calm manner rather than react with yelling and matching their tone level or your own aggression in your voice. If just experiment around with it, it's pretty, if you try for 2 weeks, like every time your teenager is having an emotional upset, take a breath and lower your voice almost to the level where they have to like turn down their volume to be able to hear what you're saying. It works, you know, but again, it's not going to change just like that. You've got to consistently prove to them that this is how you're going to respond now. But yeah, that's a really good way to interrupt that pattern.
Right. Now, that's different though, from telling them to calm down.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's what we do now, right? Like when they come at us and it's it's very like very intense, or you know, imagine you know, a household with two parents where you've got the two screaming at each other. I just see this in the movie, you know, the dad and the son are yelling at each other and the mom's like, hey, everybody just calm down, kind of a thing. Right. That's not really what we're talking about here. Because that's dismissing the emotion that's driving them. Yeah. Okay. Yes. So the nuances are very different here. Now, I know for me personally, I've got to take a break. Sometimes when I get triggered and I want to come in, like, you know, like guns blazing and like meet them toe to toe, I recognize that, like, whoa, just, you know. And so is it okay to just say, listen, I get you're upset and that you feel really strongly about this, but before I can actually deal with this with you, I just, I need to calm down. You know, and I need us to just take a break here and a pause, and then let's come back to this. Is that okay to say?
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah, that's absolutely very wise. I would encourage that. I often even encourage parents to come up, parents and teenagers, to come up together and when they're calm, not in the moment of a heated battle, come up with a code word or a code phrase that each of you can, you know, have permission to utilize, and come up with the expectations or the rules ahead of time. Like when one of us in a heated argument says this, what that means is we immediately leave and without saying another word, we leave each other and we're gone 20, 30, 40 minutes, whatever you guys predetermine. And then we meet in a different place to talk about it. So while we're gone, we work on getting our crap together, and then we come together and calmly and talk about it. If you can't be calm at that moment, then you just repeat the process. And that seems to help, because then, you know, because when a parent, you know, if a parent is trying to remain calm and it's not working, that's when we start to get worked. They're like, why isn't this working? I'm just going to go to my old ways. But if we have a code word or a code phrase that we can just utter, and then both of you just leave, that helps. But yes, like, you know what? Now is not the time. We have flipped our lids. Let's talk about this tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know I have, I'm really happy to see the conversational skills between my daughter and I evolving. And she's 14 right. years old, and her really, I mean, she's a sharp, sharp girl, and she's got mm-hmm. that awareness too of, she'll say to me, listen, I really can't talk to you right now because I'm going to say something I'm going to regret. I mean, she just,
oh, good
right
for
out.
Her.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's great. And it's like, okay, well then this is the back off mode. And we've actually got this, like yeah. we had an incident yesterday. We went shopping, and it's like, I feel like I said, you know, I'm happy with our relationship that we have. It's building, it's growing, it's going to get, you know, it's continuing to get better. And yeah. I know, you know, all the things that I'm learning right now about what's going on with her and stuff, but that doesn't mean we still don't have moments of where like, oh, sure. well, I've somehow managed to piss her off some way and I need to figure this out. But she'll, yeah. you know, she'll sit there and go like, listen, I'm going to text you later and I'm going to wow. tell you what happens. And she actually does. But yeah. we've had a few episodes where, and this is the hard one for me, where I can't disengage from her because almost that calmness is because whatever she has to say is so important or she's feeling it so emotional that the calmness actually can work in reverse. The whole like, okay. I'm not in the mood to talk about this right now. Like, I can't do this right now mm-hmm. with you. I need you to take a break. And she'll just come in with even and become even more like insulting and pull stuff out, and you're just like, dude, are you now you're just being a bitch, you know? It's like
yeah.
and so and how do I and right. I'm trying to break out of this whole thing because then right. it starts to trigger me. I start to feel like mm-hmm. I'm actually being attacked by my mm-hmm. mom coming mm-hmm. at me with a bunch of stuff, and it's right. really super hard. And so how right. do you break away from the kid who doesn't want to break away from you?
Oh, yeah, some parents that I've had have locked themselves in their room or in the bathroom in those situations, left the house, take a walk. You know, teenagers are less likely to be that aggressive in public, you know, so if you're out walking around in your neighborhood, maybe that'll help. But then when things settle down, have a conversation about that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, what's going on in those situations? You know, you seem to continue to pursue me. They want a reaction from you. You know, teenagers, right. you know, sometimes they just need to feel stimulated because they don't for some reason other times. So they need to engage in a fight to feel something, or maybe they're punishing themselves for something that they're feeling guilty about. And, you know, they start a fight in order to do that. You know, so who knows, but in the moment, you know, those are some things you can do, but then have the conversation later for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And we do. I mean, you know, both of my kids, I bring up their things. I don't say their names, but mm-hmm. sometimes they actually do listen to my show.
Yeah.
including my daughter actually. And, yeah. And so, you know, after that particular, you know, and I'm thinking about one incident in particular, mm-hmm. you know, we are able to talk about it and right. get it, but it's in the moment of, you know, me right. really realizing that my own pain is rising. Mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. this situation and feeling, you know, I started to actually feel as an adult, like I was trapped again. Like I couldn't yeah. get away from the intensity right. of what was going on and stuff. You know, and so here, you know, I'm listening to you say, well, get up and leave the room. But you know, what came to my mind was I also didn't want her to think that she couldn't have ugly emotions. And that if she did, I'd leave, because that's mm-hmm. one of my childhood wounds mm-hmm. of the fear of the ugly emotions right. pushes your parents away and they'll abandon
right.
you.
Right.
And so
the difference,
Please.
Well, the difference is if that's your memory and that's what happened to you, it probably was consistent and persistent over time. Mm-hmm. That when you had ugly emotions, they left you. Mm-hmm. If you're engaging in that because you have a moment where like, holy shit, I can't do this, and you leave, chances are that's one time out of, you know, maybe 50 when yeah. that happens. That's not going to cause, that's not likely going to cause that kind of trauma because it happens one time or a few times over your teenager's lifetime as a teenager. And then again, but coming back and saying, I needed to do, it wasn't anything you were doing. I was getting overwhelmed because of things that have happened to me in the past. I needed to leave. I'm sorry that I left because the last thing I want is you to feel like you can't have ugly feelings around me without me just dipping on you. But that time, it just, everything was right and I needed to leave. And having that conversation, like I said before, teenagers are, they're resilient and they're forgiving. They can understand that. Mm-hmm. And again, apologizing if needed, and then it can be okay. But one time or a few times versus every time, there's a big difference in that.
Yeah. Well, and as we've heard, we've discussed too, that it's the follow-up is key, right?
Yes.
Not just leaving and then not right. having that explanation
right.
after the fact of that honest, mm-hmm. transparent, hey, this is right. what was, you know, this was what was going on. Because if you just left and then came back and acted like everything was fine,
right,
then you kind of are sending them the signal that, oh, when you get really overblown, I'm out. Like
yeah.
I'm gone.
And
later.
We're never going to talk about it. Like right. we're going to come back and we're pretend it's okay and it's under the rug. That's such a gaslighting thing to do, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. So here's the other piece too for me is you know, I do parent with trauma. You know, I'm trauma informed mm-hmm. in my own kids and what their experiences have done to shape them today, and they've had their share of it. And mm-hmm. And part of that is because I, you know, had dealt with trauma, and you know, I am responsible to it, you know, in a variety of ways of inflicting some of that on them. Mm-hmm. And so parenting with trauma means this is hard to do mm-hmm. some days because, like I said, I there are possibilities of me being triggered in a negative way.
Right.
So what I want the kids to understand in some way is to know that when they do that, that they've hurt my feelings. Like it's the empathy piece of it.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to shame them into, you know, stop being mean to me and having that be a denouncement of their mm-hmm. feelings. Mm-hmm. But I want mm-hmm. them to start to learn how to have those feelings, but then how to do it in a way and have empathy for the person mm-hmm. that they're subjecting that to, because I get it. We're all guilty mm-hmm. of it. We are the cruelest to the people we're the closest to for everything
Absolutely.
Said at the beginning of the episode because of a mm-hmm. safety zone that we have. But mm-hmm. on the other hand, it really sucks to be
yeah.
the shithole for everybody's
for sure.
feelings. And I don't want them to actually think that that's actually just the way life is. Hey, you know, you can actually be loving and awesome and charismatic with everybody around, but the person that actually is there and got your back, no, they're the ones that gets
right.
to see everything all the time. And you get to say whatever you feel like saying to them and to be
right.
an asshole to them, because that's not mm-hmm. actually healthy. I mean, at the end of the day, mm-hmm. although some of us are guilty of doing it, it really isn't a healthy relationship with this other person. Mm-hmm. It really is mm-hmm. kind of troubling. So how do we start to train some empathy in through these experiences so that they understand without telling them, hey, you made me feel bad.
Yeah. Right.
What are some ways that can happen?
I think that first and foremost, never allow your teenager or your child to talk to you so disrespectfully, consistently over time without consequences. And consequences meaning not punishment, having something taken away. I mean consequences as in having to have a conversation after. So the more you let it go on, the more you risk them thinking that they can treat a loved one like that.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ways, one of the best ways to talk to anybody about that is to use I feel statements. So after it's done or even in the midst of it, you know, I realize, you know, Johnny, hey, I realize that you're upset. You have every right to be upset, but I don't deserve to be talked to that way. And I feel disrespected when you talk to me that way. Is there a way you can express yourself without doing that. That it's okay to say that. That is different than saying, you're making me feel like shit because you're calling me a bitch all the time. That is really giving them responsibility for your feelings. That is not teaching them empathy. That is teaching them that they're responsible for your feelings and that they can't be upset because you're going to get upset. Mm-hmm. But to say, you know what? I understand you're upset and I want to hear you, but you don't get to talk to me like that. I don't deserve to be called names. I feel hurt and upset when you call me names, and that gets in the way of me listening to you. Is there another way that you can communicate with me? You know, so that is helpful. That's teaching them the empathy piece. That's teaching them the respect piece without attaching responsibility to your feelings. And that can be said in the moment. That can be said later as a consequence, like, hey, I didn't get to tell you this when we were talking, or when you were talking earlier, because, you know, it just was upsetting. But I just want you to know that I felt really disrespected when you called me names, and I don't really deserve to be talked to that way. Nobody does. The next time, can you please try and not call me names? And, you know, that will make it easier for me to hear you in the moment. And, you know, they'll likely apologize, or they might even apologize before you even have a chance to say anything. But consistently responding to them that way will help. Don't allow that behavior to continue over time, because otherwise they will think that that's okay.
Right, right. And having, you know, me personally been in, you know, a narcissistic and abusive relationship, like, that's my fear, is to raise kids that would treat another person that way. And, you know, they didn't see all of the elements of it, as, you know, can happen in those relationships. You know, a lot of the stuff can go on where a lot of people don't get to see and witness it. And I'm glad they didn't, but yet, you know, we're coming into this household together. And that's one of those where I would get triggered. And again, my children are great kids. They're just acting like teenagers, and teenagers just tend to do things. And so some of us have some raw, salty wounds that it triggers us differently for it. Sure. And I know holding boundaries is one of those things that, when, you know, that's a piece of when you've been into these relationships, they usually come from having a life of really having your boundaries violated. And I've done that. I had to start doing that with them, of, you know, when it got to that place of like, listen, you're entitled, and this is my phrase, you are entitled to your feelings, you are allowed to feel them, but you're not allowed to talk to me like that. Like, you know, that's where we're at. And there's a concept called empathetic confrontation.
Sure.
Do you know something about that, or that's
I think it's like, just like what we were talking about, that the empathy of, and empathy is basically, you know, trying to put yourself in another person's shoes to understand what they might be feeling, given the circumstances that are going on for them. And, you know, confronting them in that manner that, you know, I understand that you're upset and you have a reason to be upset. I want to hear that. But I would like to hear you when you're not calling me names, or when you're not talking to me in such of an aggressive manner. You know, when do you think that can happen? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, and I, you know, I guess it's easier said than done sometimes. And that's why I said, you know, and asked, you know, if we actually have to put a pause button on this to get everything to de-escalate. And it is, you know, it feels like there's a balance in there again, between saying, I'm not dismissing what you have to say. I'm not dismissing how you feel right now. I'm just not emotionally ready to handle you know, what's being tossed in my direction in there. And, you know, and I guess it's really weird because parents aren't used to having talking like that, not even with their own partners, really. Right. That's, we're all kind of like in a big gaposis of, well, that wasn't the conversation we grew up with. So this is really a skill set to be able to learn. And which is why I think this is helpful in talking about it and providing examples of what that sounds like in a conversation. And doing it. And I guess, you know, what I hear you saying too, is that there's a lot of value in having these conversations before we have the fight, like, you know, kind of figuring out how they get involved. I try to, you know, when the kids have their own issues with their friends, and you know, I try to use those as experiences for empathy too. You know, when they're sitting there having like a rundown with somebody, and it's blowing up, you know, and trying to find a balance between not dismissing how my child feels about the situation, but also helping them see maybe from, you know, gosh, well, that person, you know, we've seen how her relationship is with her mom. She's having a hard time over there. Sure. You know, that kind of thing. Is there value in those kinds of conversations?
Oh,
am I just torturing my kids?
Sure. Okay. No, you're not torturing them at all. First of all, teenagers, I mean, they want to talk about that stuff. They're talking about that stuff with their friends at school. They're gossiping and judging other people. They're talking about it. So now you have an opportunity to talk about it in a controlled environment with an adult. And they're talking about something that involves somebody else's weird behavior, not their own. So yeah, that's like perfect. The only thing that would make that better is if you were in the car driving where they don't have to make eye contact with you. Like that's a great conversation to have. Like I'll tell parents, go on Google and find situations. If you can't think of any, find a situation with a teenager where, you know, Google teenage misbehavior and there'll be stories, and then bring it to your teen and be like, hey, what would you do in this situation? What do you think ought to happen? Do you have any theories on maybe the reason that they behave this way? What might've been going on for them? Or when you're driving, again, those are other opportunities. Most people, when they're driving, encounter somebody who's driving like an asshole. You know, why might that person be going so fast, cutting me off? You know, like, yeah, it's annoying, but oh, what might be going on? Well, maybe they're having an emergency. Maybe they're rushing to the hospital because their loved one was taken to the ER. You know, so those are really great opportunities to develop empathy. And I love what you said before about it being a skill set, because I think that's one thing that we often forget is that empathy, communication, time management, organization, all it's a skill. And in order to improve a skill, it needs to be practiced. This isn't just something that's going to develop on its own with people. I mean, we might be born with a little bit of empathy, but it needs to be developed and nurtured and talked about. And as we age, a broader understanding of that skill. We communicate differently as we get older. We empathize differently as we get older. So for parents, understanding that these are skills like that my kid really needs to practice, just like if they're in basketball, they really need to practice the skill of shooting a free throw. They also need to practice mental skills to get better at them. I mean, we're seeing right now with communication, case in point, that kids are really losing they appear to be losing the ability to communicate face to face because they're always doing it online.
Yeah.
Well, they're not really losing the ability. They're just not practicing. They're not getting the opportunities to practice. So we need to offer that to them and help them practice those skills because it is going to be handy in the future. I mean, adults are right that they need those social skills and those communication skills face to face, but adults are wrong that technology is ruining our kids and they're losing the ability to communicate. No, it's your responsibility to help present them with opportunities to learn the communication and to talk to them about that.
Right. And they get to do that with you, right? I mean, even if they're not doing it with their friends as much. I know that's one of the things with, you know, back to my daughter in particular, that's where she feels the most uneasy is the face-to-face. Mm-hmm. That's the part of it that actually gives her the greatest degree of anxiety. And there's, you know, there's reasons behind it, but there's also the fact that she's a teenage girl. Mm-hmm. And when you've been attacking, you know, behind the scenes, like through social media and stuff. I mean, because you can say whatever you want in a text message or Snapchat, like, you know, and it's horrible. Yeah. And I'm, you know, I'm grateful. Jesus, I'm so grateful we didn't have that, you know, growing up.
Oh my, I think about that all the time when I hear stories like, fuck, I would have been screwed.
Oh, geez. Yeah, no kidding. I remember, you know, one of my stories that just is kind of sticks in my head is I got mad at one of my friends in like elementary school, maybe it was like middle school. And my venting was I wrote, I hate her, you know, her name on like 50 sheets of notebook paper and taped them up all over my wall. Right. And I just got to sit in the room and stare at all of that and go, oh, I feel so much better. And then it was fine. And then she came over and I forgot to take all the signs down. Oh. So I had my brother, my little brother, stop her at the door and go, "Don't let her in, don't let her in." And I'm like grabbing all of this. But you know, like the equivalent, the digital equivalent is you send it as a text and you Snapchat and you blast it out there. And I was like, my little version was scribbling it and just, you know, going, I just needed to get that out.
And that's a really productive way of processing your anger towards her is writing it down like that and then posting it where you can see it. You're using a lot of different parts of your brain in order to integrate and process your feelings that you were having. So he actually did something that I would tell a teenager to do to process that. But just the forgetfulness of taking it down, like, could have bitch in the ass, I guess.
Yeah, it would have been bad. But kids are doing that.
Online.
They're doing it online. Like they're doing the exact same thing. They're just, they're able to send it out to everybody and have somebody else witness it, you know, and acknowledge it and stuff, which is then what makes it really particularly painful. So that's, to me, that's where I think empathy piece is important. Because you wouldn't do that. We know that we don't do that as adults. Well, some people don't do that as adults because they know the consequence to that. They know the feeling of it hurting somebody else's feelings. And that's, and you know, I talked with Pam Leo. I love her. She texts me all the time. And she's the woman that is famous for the quote of, "Let's raise children that won't have to recover from their childhoods." Based on her book, Connection Parenting. And she always brings up the fact that, you know, we tend to talk to our kids differently than we would talk to our friends. And if our friends came at us, you know, and had very hostile feelings, you know, directed at us, we might actually be more mindful and understanding, and we'd be able to process everything going on around them and stuff, especially if they're really good and close friends to us. With somebody we don't know, we just tell them to fuck off, like, you know, everything. But with our close friends, if our best friend came at us and said, you know, you pissed me off, or you're being a bitch, or whatever, we would actually probably spend more time trying to understand them. Sure. But with our kids, we don't seem to, we don't default that way. But yeah, we need to default to them the same way we would our best friend if they were having some sort of struggle. We would get it, right?
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. The difference is teenagers don't always come at you saying, "Hey, you upset me." They come at you with intense emotion and you have to kind of decipher what's going on. So that's the difference. And it's hard to do that because when somebody comes at you with intense emotion, our instinct is to defend or to get emotional on ourselves. So it takes conscious parenting and mindfulness to be able to, okay, they need something from me. This isn't personal. They need something. What's going on?
Right. And going back to a phrase that you use all the time, which is they are adult in training. So you can't look at a 6-foot, you know, human in front of you that appears to be an adult, or, you know, my daughter, we see eye to eye. She feels like she's the size of an adult, but they're not adults yet. Yeah. And that they're not using, you know, and don't even have the capacity at that point to use all the experiences as well as just the brain power that we actually have available to us. And I think that's, like you've said before, that's a huge piece of understanding, that they don't have a fully functioning formed brain, and that they're going to stumble and struggle with this piece of it. And, you know, we have to be ready to coach them through that and guide them and parent them through those aspects of it and be mindful of it, that, you know, them calling a name is not really what the issue is, and to stop ourselves from being triggered by that. I think that's the other piece. Right. All parents have been yelled at by their parents. We've all been screamed at, yelled at, punished, and it's hard to not go to that default right away of, absolutely, I'm going to respond the way that my brain is telling me to do it, because that's what happened to me when I was growing up. I got into, you know, screaming matches with kids and stuff. So is there any other advice, you know, I mean, for parents when we're dealing, because this is like I said, you know, I know we've been very candid and frank, and we've used a lot of very colorful words, because it does incite a lot of emotion in us individually here. And it is hard. It's the hardest time to parent your kid. It's easy when they're awesome, right? Sure. It's really tough to be their parent when they're not awesome. So is there any other kind of advice for us as parents with teachers for through this particular phase, or this particular element we're dealing with?
Yeah, I think the first thing I would say is find a way to stay connected with your teen. I think far too many, not all parents do this, but far too many parents underestimate the value of, like, a lunch date once a week. just between you and that particular child. So if you got four kids, you're doing four lunch dates. I don't know, but, or maybe one a week, you know, so you're doing, you're connecting with them one-on-one, you know, once a month or once a week, depending upon how many kids you have. I think it's really important that parents understand the value in that. And chances are that is going to be a time where everybody starts off the conversation calm. You're connecting with them. Like maybe you go pick them up from school and say, hey, I'm giving you the afternoon off. We're going to go see a movie. Is that okay with you? You know, and, you know, have lunch and see a movie and have fun together. Be silly. Connect that way. Talk about what's going on in their life. And, you know, so I think that's really a beneficial thing for parents to do, is to remember to do that. And the other thing is try not to give consequences or punishments in the heat of the battle. Mm. Like really do that later. You don't have to in the moment give a consequence. You can always give a consequence the next day when you're calmed down. And because ultimately what ends up happening is parents, we screw ourselves, because when we're emotional and upset, we're like, that's it. You don't get your phone for a month. And then we realize the next day, like, shit, we're really grounding ourselves when we do that. Like, how am I going to actually keep them from their phone for a month? So before you consequence, maybe just give it some time and settle down. That would be the second thing that I would really, you know, communicate as important. And yeah. Okay. Like, it's okay to do that.
Well, and again, you brought up something that popped into my brain, which is, I think a lot of us were parented that consequences were punishments, right? Like, mm-hmm. So for everything. And, you know, here's me, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know what it is, but I, you know, like you said, to consequence doesn't have to be punishment. In fact, it probably shouldn't be punishment, right? Like we're trying to talk about emotional development here. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, I mean, again, we go back to work. You know, you might lose your job if you keep like raging against everybody in the office, because that's reasonable, right? But
your consequence.
It's a consequence of that. But mm-hmm. more often than not, you get talked to. You get a discussion about what's going on. You get, what can I do? What can we do differently for corrective action? Right. And so in this case here, consequences might actually, like, you know, shift your thinking and think a consequence is just having a discussion, that they're just going to have to sit mm-hmm. with it, and they're going to have to hear you talk about the impact of that, and then that's it. Because again, everybody's all about grounding. Take the phone, take the car, take the, you know, whatever. And you're right. It's not reality. And mm-hmm. it's not what we really want for our kids.
No.
Right? I don't want them to know that they can't have an emotion and I'm going to take everything away from them. That's not the point.
Exactly. It's not productive. Yeah. It's not productive. It's not reality. You know who gets punished? Criminals. Criminals get punished. When you use the word punishment to ground your kids, like you're going to get a punishment for this, what you're teaching them is that consequences are punishments. Natural consequences to negative behavior or making a mistake, you know, that it's something to avoid. It's something that we shouldn't have happen to us. It's something to be really upset about if it happens. Well, that's bullshit, because consequences can be good or bad. You know, a consequence of me doing this podcast might be more people visit my website. Mm-hmm. It's not a punishment. A consequence of me doing this podcast and swearing so much might be that I lose a client because they don't like it that their therapist swears. Okay, that's a consequence that I'm okay with. It's not negative. It's not a punishment. It's just like some people don't like a sweary therapist. All right. So, but criminals get punished, and they should. But kids don't get punished. They get consequences. And anytime you can allow for natural consequences before your own like created consequences, that's much better. Because mm-hmm. then you get to sit back and be like, well, I'll support you through the consequence, but that's skipping school. You got detention. I mean, that was your choice.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, parenting has always been in the past, you know, and for some people today, it's the telling. I'm going to get you to avoid things. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you what you should be doing. And as we've talked about many, many times, that's not what the kids actually need. They actually need to learn and experience mm-hmm. everything. And in order to be able to put all those pieces together, and a piece of it is that they're going to have these really strong, powerful emotions, and they are going to be lobbed mm-hmm. in our direction. And And we want them to learn how to regulate those and how mm-hmm. to do them in a way that is respectful and to the people they love so that mm-hmm. they have healthy relationships. I mean, to me, that's what I want from them. Right. Not that they have undying respect for me and that they always treat me good and I never have to deal with them, right? Yeah. I mean, it'd be awesome, but yeah. that's not the reality.
That's not reality.
That's not reality.
If you want your kid to leave the nest walking on crutches, yeah, parent right. that way. But right. if you want them to leave the nest with a fully developed, functional, pretty healthy brain and independence, being able to have faith in themselves and belief in themselves that they can do it and make a mistake and be okay, then parent the hard way.
Yeah, right. And, the other thing is I know we've been lighthearted about this. We usually are. And this is why I like talking to you and stuff. And I know that's why people like listening to you. And I think most people yeah. usually grab beer or wine when they're listening to our episodes.
Why don't we? We should.
Because we're doing them early in the morning. Yeah, that's true. But from a serious standpoint, the other thing I think about, the other consequence of my choices and my actions with my kids is that I don't want them having to go through hardcore therapy like I did at 40.
Yes.
I'm you know, borrowing something from Pam. I don't yeah. want them to have to recover from their childhood. Mm-hmm. That to me, all the mm-hmm. other things don't mean anything to me to know mm-hmm. that I'm giving them tools, you know, that right. are going to leave them in a place to do way more than I ever imagined that they could possibly do. But more importantly, that they're happy, you know, with
Absolutely.
All of that and not feeling pent up and stuff like that. So I'll tolerate.
Absolutely.
I'll see them for what they are, even when they're in their ugliest. And I've said that. I mean, to be honest, I've walked into my daughter's room. I'll give her a hug afterwards, and she's like, "What the hell's up with these hugs?" And I go, "I just want you to know that you can be terrible, and I love you.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Yeah,
you're allowed mm-hmm. to be that way, and I'm not yeah. giving you away. I'm not, you know, yeah. You know, I'm not going to send you to the next parent because that's what happened to my kids. Right. My kids got to be unmanageable, and they got sent off to the next parent to see what she could do right. with them. And that's what I'm doing yeah. with them. You know, is letting right. them know that." No, guess what? You get to be horrible sometimes to me. That's fine.
Yeah.
You know,
good
but,
for you.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying.
Yeah, you're doing great. It's not easy, but you're doing it.
Yeah, I'm doing it. And everybody gets to see. Cool. Well,
Jack, you're modeling for people.
I'm doing my best. That's what I tell everybody. I'm doing my best and trying to be mm-hmm. authentic with it. So, and mm-hmm. sometimes it works. And sometimes if I'm going to tell you, if I fucked up, I fucked up. And like I said, last night we had one of those fuck ups, but like I said, coming out of it, my daughter's like, "I'm going to text you. We're going to talk about it." And she did. She gets to a place where yeah. she's like, "Listen, this is how this whole situation made me feel." Okay. And I looked at it like, all right, well, so this is what I did. Here's and then explain. This is what I was thinking. This is why I did this and what was going through my mind. Am I making sense to you?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I get it. Okay. Well, and then awesome. An apology for being snarky. And it's like, well, I'm sorry I made you feel that way. And it's just like, oh my God, like that feels so healthy to me. And it yeah. wasn't like that a year ago, you know, with
right.
both of them and
yeah.
stuff. So
wonderful.
Cool. Well, I'm not sharing that so that you can tell me that. So, but thank you.
No, I know. I mean, it's a really good example and hope for other parents that, you know, it's never too late. And it's as simple as that.
Yeah. That's good. That's awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to more episodes with you
yeah,
in season 2 and 10 and however many that we do. So, you know, we're doing this in the spring. And so, like I said, I'm trying to plot my way of getting to Wisconsin this summer when it's not like mm-hmm. snowing and crazy.
Yeah.
That way we can see each other, grab a beer. You know,
yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, cool. Well, Jax, as always, it's a pleasure to have you on there. And for everybody that's listening, all your links are going to be in the podcast notes. I know that people have reached out to you that listen mm-hmm. to the show to get help from you because you are awesome. You are the teenage whisperer. And so anybody that's looking for a therapist, a family coach, counselor that can work with you as a parent or with your kids and help you kind of bridge some of these gaps and kind of navigate these really dicey and sometimes dangerous waters
yes.
of parenting teenagers, Jax Anderson is your person. So thank you so much, Jax, for being again.
Thank you. On the show again. I appreciate it. Always fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. All right, everyone. Later.
Thank you for listening to One Broken Mom. You can find podcast notes on my website at amiqueercone.com, and there I'll provide all links to all of the resources that we mentioned on the episode. Also, if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for other episodes, feel free to send me an email. And if you are interested in sponsoring the show, I'd love to have you be a part of the team. Finally, if you like what you hear, please share the podcast and leave a review so that others can find it. We are all here to get better together. I am the host, Ami Quercone, and as always, I am super grateful to have you as a listener. Until next time, have a great day.